Well, a big thanks to Darren and the team for driving us through the afternoon. It is Wednesday, May 28. I'm Shane Dawson and you are listening to Game On. Coming up between now and the new music show at 7pm, Keith Tracy previews this evening's Conference League final and chats League of Ireland. Damien Lawler brings us the big Gaelic Games stories and we'll hear from Tipperary footballer Seanie O'Connor ahead of a crucial Tailteann Cup clash this weekend. While Nadine Doherty and Aoife Murray have the latest news from the Ladies Football and Camogie Championships. Plus, we'll round up today's sports news headlines. So if you want to get in touch, you can text 51552, WhatsApp 087 187 9200, or find us on X at GameOn 2FM.
This is 2FM's Game On.
Good evening. Welcome along to the show. It is great to have your company wherever in the world you are tuning in from. Good evening, Keith Tracy. How's the form?
I'm great, Shane. How are you?
Very well. Looking forward to a big European night this evening in Wroclaw.
Yeah, I can't wait. I think Chelsea are overwhelming favourites. But the more you look at that Real Betis team with Manuel Pellegrini as the manager, old Manchester City manager. He's a wily old fox, Pellegrini, so he won't go out there and let Betis be lamb to the slaughter. I think they'll have quite a good tactical setup, and I'm sure we'll get into it in more depth later. But they've got some decent players that can hurt you, some blast from the past that used to be in the Premier League. So a half-decent team, Betis, so I don't suppose Chelsea will have it all their own way.
Hopefully it is an even contest. What do you make of a team of Chelsea's stature being in the third tier of a European final?
Look, it is what it is. They were in there. They're in the final. They were overwhelming favourites to win the trophy. And when you look at the teams that they beat, the likes of a Shamrock Rovers, FC Noah, Panathinaikos, Djurgården, FC Copenhagen, these are teams that Chelsea should be just swatting away, you know. And largely they have done that. They've played an awful lot of kids as well. I mean, the league phase of this, they didn't even register Cole Palmer, which will just tell you how easy it has been for them. But like I say, I do think Betis will give them a real good test. They beat Florentina in the semi-finals, and obviously that the ex-Manchester United player Anthony playing so well at the minute, his name is reverberating around Spain, so hopefully Anthony can come back and do a little bit, make it really interesting for all the neutrals.
Yeah, before we dive into that match in detail, just to round up some news headlines, Liverpool assistant coach John Heitinga has been given permission to speak to Ajax about their vacant head coach's position. The Amsterdam club's collapse in the final month of the Eredivisie title race saw Francesco Farioli resign after just one season in charge. Heitinga moved to Anfield with Arne Slot last summer as a former Ajax player and youth team manager who spent 5 months in interim charge of the team from January 2023 before moving to West Ham to become his ex-Everton manager, David Moyes' assistant. And briefly, just in golf, the dates for the 2027 Ryder Cup at Adair Manor have been confirmed, with the biennial match play event taking place from the 17th to the 19th of September. The Limerick course was awarded the event back in 2019 when the tournament was originally envisioned to take place in 2026 until the COVID pandemic pushed back the schedule by a year. And finally, Team Ireland will have 17 rowers across 8 boat classes representing at the 2025 European Rowing Championships in Plovdiv, Bulgaria. The 4-day event begins tomorrow and runs through until Sunday. The European Championships will represent the first major international event of the new Olympic cycle. Paul O'Donovan is the big name absentee, with the 3-time Olympic medalist missing out to concentrate on his medical studies. 9 of Ireland's 2024 Olympians are back in action, including Paris medalists Dara Lynch, Philip Doyle and Fintan McCarthy, who will be joined by 3 high performance athletes making their senior international debuts: Izzy Clements in the lightweight women's single, Aisling Hayes in the women's quad, and Claire Ferrick returning to international competition in the W4X. There will be live coverage of the European Championships on both Saturday and Sunday morning from 8:30 in the morning on RT2 and the RT Player. Some news, transfer headlines, transfer rumours: Caoimhín Kelleher to Brentford, perhaps. Does that make sense to you, Keith Tracy?
Yeah, well, on paper it sounds like a wonderful move. Brentford are a team that I really enjoy watching play. They have a very progressive and modern manager in Thomas Frank. The one thing I would look at and think, there's an awful lot of suitors. At the end of the day, Brentford are still a selling club. You'd imagine Brian Mbeumo, a lot of people will want his services next season. Johan Vissa the same, Damsgaard in the middle. So you would just hope he's not going into a depleted Brentford, but that Brentford team, if Quivin was to go into that team, you would imagine the style of play, the way they go about it. Yeah, it seems like a match made in heaven, and everything I'm hearing from Quivin lately seems he wants to go and play first team football on a more regular basis. So, yeah, great to see. It seems like a really good move on paper.
Yeah, current goalkeeper Mark Flecken linked with a move to Bayer Leverkusen under Erik ten Hag. I did see somewhere with Onana linked as well to Leverkusen. I don't know how serious that was to link with ten Hag. You mentioned him, Brian Mbeumo. He was linked with Man United, as is Matheus Cunha. Like, what is the attraction to go to Manchester United?
I don't know, Shane. I was going to ask you and hope you could tell me.
you're the expert here, Keith.
I can't figure this one out. I really can't. And I've spoke to people within my household asking, why does Matheus Cunha fancy going to Manchester United? 64 million, the release fee has been triggered, but Cunha has come out and said he fancies United. He thinks they're one of the biggest clubs in the world. But you look at so many players, and this is just in the most recent future. The likes of Jadon Sancho, Rashford, Anthony, McTominay, people who have gone into that club and had to leave because it's just become stagnant and toxic so quickly. You zoom out a little bit, the likes of Alanga. Remember, he was there. He's at Nottingham Forest now, setting the world on fire. Mkhitaryan, doing so well. Sabitzer. These are players that have all sorts of talent. And when Matheus Cunha turned around to his agent and his people and said, I want to go to Manchester United, their heads must have fell off and thought, why? What is the attraction? So many games lost last season. The middle of the pitch is a big, big worry for me. And when you look at the 3-4-3 that obviously Ruben Amorim is so wedded to, Cunha will be up front with probably Bruno Fernandes and Højlund, which, look, talented players, but you need a lot more than just talent on a pitch at times. And while Cunha will improve Manchester United, you know, I seen a stat there just before I came in saying he's walked the most out of any player in the Premier League, which is not what Manchester United need right now. They do not need luxury players. They need everybody pulling their weight. And you don't always get that with very, very talented individuals.
Perhaps I'm clutching at straws, but there is still the fact that they are one of the biggest clubs in the world at the moment. Even though the form has been rock bottom, that there is still a desire, perhaps, or luxury to wear Manchester United, to play in Old Trafford. Yes, you could be in a relegation scrap, but to still have that. Perhaps it is clutching at straws. One player you did mention there, Anthony, is absolutely ripping it up in La Liga. Let's hear from Real Betis boss Manuel Pellegrini speaking about Anthony ahead of this evening's final.
I wanted to ask you about Anthony, and obviously he's been brilliant for you. He's got quite emotional when he was speaking to the host broadcaster. Tears, said he found it hard to cope mentally with not playing at Manchester United. How proud are you that you've helped him turn his career around?
Well, I think that I can be proud, but I think that what Anthony did, I spoke with him before he came in to Betis. He told me that he was not playing because he was not happy, but he had a lot of complaint about what he has done also, so he wanted revenge. And here in Betis, I think that he had it, and he did it in the way we know that he can do it, because it's not easy for you to pay 100 million for a player. And Anthony is a very good player, I am absolutely sure that this is a huge time here in Betis to continue improving his career.
The point I was making before we heard that clip about Manchester United still being one of the biggest clubs in the world and the weight that goes with wearing and playing in a Manchester United shirt, is Anthony the prime example then of a player that you can kind of have more freedom, you can express yourself more if you go abroad, similar to perhaps Scott McTominay, and that's how you perform, then you don't have that added extra expectation?
Yeah, possibly. But I do think there's a certain type of player that Manchester United need in the build. And these, you know, luxury players who will play well at certain times. At Manchester United, you've got to win every single game. You draw a game, you lose a game. You know, it seems now they lose an awful lot of games. But Anthony just never seemed to settle. He's typically, you know, very, very left-footed, will very, very rarely use his right foot. And I think people just got a hold of him very early doors. But as a winger, when you're coming into a team and the team is not playing well, it's very difficult to be the one who says, I'll be the one to make things happen all the time. And look, that United team is on a a downward spiral now for the last couple of years, and it's very difficult to say, well, Anthony didn't play well in there, so he's not a good player. There's been a whole host of players, a lot that I've already just rattled off. So I wouldn't hold it against him. And in 17 La Liga games this season for Betis, he scored 5 goals. In 8 Conference League games, he scored 4 goals. He's a very, very good winger. And there's a debate raging. You know, a lot of United fans are saying to me, we should take back Sancho, we should take back Rashford. If they're going to take back anybody, it should be Anthony. He's the one who's setting the world on fire. Sancho's done okay at Chelsea. Rashford has done okay at Aston Villa. But Anthony is the one. And of course, McTominay, he's been sold, but he's done so well also. So, you know, I just look at that United team and I think anybody going, I can't remember an attacking player going into Manchester United and setting the world on fire. I can't remember. We're probably going back to Zlatan Ibrahimovic, and that's being kind to Zlatan.
Even if Cristiano Ronaldo doesn't work out, you know.
Exactly, you're struggling.
Yeah, that's it. That's a massive. Well, they're going to need Anthony on fire this evening. Real Betis, the games tend to be high scoring. 17 of the last 20 matches have featured goals at both ends, so they're being a bit porous in defence as well. They finished 6th in La Liga despite only taking 3 points from their final 4 matches, including a 4-1 defeat at Atletico Madrid. You then look at Chelsea's form and how they finished the season, getting Champions League football already assured as well. Are Chelsea kind of coming back to that team that they were? I think Maresca was even quoted as saying that they're kind of becoming an important team again.
Yeah, I do think Chelsea are getting there. I look at their squad and there's an awful lot of players I like, an awful lot of talent, World Cup winners in the building. It's fairly similar to Arsenal. I don't think they're quite as far down the road at Arsenal are, but you look at Nicholas Jackson up front, and while he will do okay in a certain amount of games, but the top end elite football within England and Europe, I think he's just a little bit short. So I do think Chelsea need an out-and-out centre forward. When you look at, you know, Enzo Fernandez, Cole Palmer, Madueke, Casado, Cucurella, a left back I really like, Reece James finding his full fitness. Chelsea are in a really, really good place, and they could become the first club to win all 5 major UEFA competition titles. They've had 2 days less rest than Betis have, so that might be something. Well, you'd imagine that Betis would start like a house on fire, try and put Chelsea on the back foot and try and stick in the game. I do think the fourth goal is going to be massive tonight, Shane. Betis have opened the scoring in 12 of the last 13 Conference League matches. So you'd imagine if Chelsea can get their noses in front, it might just hurt Betis moving forward.
OK, let's hear from Chelsea boss now, Enzo Maresca.
I'm very proud because, first of all, because of the players. I feel part of their improvement, the way they grew through the season. And I feel especially proud for that because they are a fantastic group. A fantastic squad. They are good boys. They work hard. They try to help each other. And I said, probably most of the time it was from outside that we were not good enough. We were too young. We don't have a leader, blah, blah, blah. These kind of things that at the end is all come from results. We were in 4 competition at the beginning of the season. If we, today we finish Champions League. If we are able to win on Wednesday, we are out from FA Cup and Carabao. But I think overall we can say that has been a very good season. I already said that for me it was a good season, but can become very good if we were able to get Champions League, and hopefully we can win Wednesday.
So they won their last 5 of 6 matches in the Premier League, and Maresca touched on it there about the youthfulness to this squad. I think it's the youngest average age of a Premier League squad, or in the top 5 at least anyway. Are Chelsea and is Enzo Maresca building something special there at the moment?
Yeah, it definitely looks that way. Although I wouldn't say rubbish what they've done in Europe. I think the level of opposition they've had is quite low. But you look at the 4th place finish within the Premier League, I think is a brilliant result.
How big of an achievement is that for this squad that were probably labelled that they didn't work hard enough in the past?
Yeah, and I remember at the start of the season, Shane, I was using words like chaotic, unmanageable. There were so many people in the building that just weren't happy. The stuff with Mudrick, the drugs ban. There was just so much swirling around the building that you thought that's going to leak onto the pitch at some point. And to be fair, Enzo Maresca has done a wonderful job. 69 points, only 5 points off 2nd place Arsenal. So I do think there's a little bit of something there. But as you said, with a young squad, with youth generally will come inconsistency. And I think that's where Chelsea have come and done. But look, I think Champions League football already in the bag, I think, is a brilliant, brilliant result. If they can pick up a trophy, it's a brilliant start to Enzo Maresca's Chelsea career.
Okay, perhaps it would be a bit of a surprise if Chelsea stumbled at the final hurdle in this evening's match. Will it be a surprise if Shamrock Rovers stumble and throw away this League of Ireland title, Keith? It's already wrapped up, is it not?
I don't want to say that. It's starting to look a little bit ominous for other teams. When Shamrock Rovers beat St. Pat's a week or so ago, it did look like there was a little bit of a gulf. I know Pat's finished the game with a better XG. They had chances within it, but there was just moments in that game where Shamrock Rovers were on top and they scored. They were absolutely ruthless. And I remember last season, the season before, doing so many Shamrock Rovers games and thinking, Rovers haven't really turned up yet. They're in second gear, but they're winning games of football. And last season, a big chunk of what Shelbourne did was early on in the season, and he got their noses in front and he managed to stay there. Nobody's managed to do that. And the frightening thing for me is I don't think we've seen Shamrock Rovers out of third gear yet. I think they're going to get better and stronger and stronger. Now, hopefully, as a St. Pat's and a neutral fan, a Shelbourne man, over as you are, Shane,
yeah,
I think Europe maybe might stifle Shamrock Rovers a little bit if they go deep.
Just the depth in the squad, though.
I know.
Wasn't that quadruple sub they made a few weeks ago? It's like Watts, Mandreou. It's ridiculous.
Like, if you're the opposition manager, I'd be in the dressing room saying, lads, keep it tight, give them nothing, get into the 70th minute. They're leggy. They haven't had an awful lot of time off, and then they're bringing internationals off the bench to come and play. So it is an embarrassment to riches, but you'd imagine Shelbourne have got to improve. St. Pat's have got to improve. They haven't really come to the party yet. Derry are still in the mix. So there's still hope, but I'm ready to jump ship. I said I fancy St. Pat's at the start of the season. I'm ready to go. I'm ready to jump ship. I'm bang on board with Shamrock Rovers winning the league.
Well, understandably, because 8 of the last 10 seasons, the halfway leaders went on to win the league. So the stats don't lie in that regard. Shells, perhaps they do need Sean Boyd, Paddy Barrett. Conor Cairns was missing last weekend, so they've been bereft of a few really key players. And if they get them back, perhaps a change of fortunes. What hasn't clicked for Pats?
I'm not too sure. I think out possession, they're nowhere near as solid as they need to be. The defensive issues, you know, the midfield, there's an awful lot of talent in there. I love Chris Forrester, I love Jamie Lennon, Brandon Kavanagh, but I do think it needs to be a little bit more workmanlike. Stephen Kenny will say it's the way they play the game. They will bomb bodies forward, the left back, the right back, the two centre midfielders will all go and get into the box. But when they lose it, teams are just thinking, we can go straight for the jugular here. And Pat's game plan is a very, very difficult one to execute, because they're going to have the lion's share of possession. Their passing accuracy has to be really, really good. And teams now just think, right, we'll go and soak up some pressure and Pats will give us an opportunity at some point. So I don't think the wingers have been great. I think Mason Melia, the young lad up front, is doing so, so well, but he's still learning. And Aidan Keane's injury has obviously stifled Pats a little bit. So I'm not too sure. I think it's quite similar to probably what Shelbourne would say, is if they had their best 11 on the pitch every game, then maybe they would be a little bit more competitive. Whereas, you know, Pats have missed Forrester, Lennon, the fullbacks have come out at some points as well. And there's a lot of people not quite performing to the levels they should.
Okay. Perhaps Cork as well could be labelled as well, missing key players as well, and that has them down at the wrong end of the table, struggling with Sligo Rovers. Waterford, new manager in. Can Galway cause some problems for Rovers on Friday in Tallaght? Who knows? Bose Derry, just to finish up on that one, third against Fort in Daly Mount Park. That's not much between those sides.
Yeah, about on 27 points, as you say, toward against Fort. It'll be a big one. I'm really looking forward to seeing Whelan up front for Bowes. Already 4 goals and 1 assist, and everybody is still talking about Lise Mousset, and I'm sure Colin Whelan must be thinking, what have I got to do for people to start talking about me? Young Ross Tierney as well is doing so well, 4 goals already. And it's funny, you know, Alan Reynolds is either, you know, manager of the week or he's up there to be sacked. It's just a crazy, crazy league at the minute. And look, Derry is somebody that I've gone on record and saying I don't really fancy, but they're sticking around and they're making a real fight of it. They're winning games. Duffy has scored 6 goals and 2 assists. Mullen and Boyce starting to come to the party with goals. So Derry will be in the back of their minds thinking, do you know what, people are saying Shamrock Rovers are going to run away with this. We'll try and reevaluate that. So I'm not too sure, but these are the type of games you feel that if either Bowes or Derry are going to give us a title race, they've got to win these games.
Okay, lots to look forward to. More football chat tomorrow. Marie Crowe being the company of Rebecca Cray to chat Women's League of Ireland, Women's Nations League and a bit of League of Ireland as well. For now, Keith Tracy, thank you as always for popping into the studio. We're turning our attention to Gaelic games after the break. We've Nadine Doherty, we've Aoife Murray and up next, Damien Lawler.
RTE 2FM.
Now, Damien Lawler joins us on the line with all the latest Gaelic Games news and talking points. And Mayo GAA, Damien, have been in the news for a variety of reasons this week. However, on the pitch, they have what is essentially a must-win All-Ireland group match away to Tyrone. And they'll be preparing for this challenge without Kevin McStay, a man who has given so much to the county.
Yeah, Shane, look, at the Mayo have been in the headlines for the last week, and they've been in the headlines for quite some years, really. They are a high-profile team. Everybody has an interest in them. And this week, as we know, they've been the news because the GAA president and director general went over to Mayo to preside over a meeting to explain a lot of their financial situation, allegations of abuse coming up against officers and stuff like that. So as you said at the start there, they now go and face Tyrone away from home without their manager, Kevin McStay. Kevin had he withdrew earlier this week, as we know, for the time being, to deal with some personal health issues. You know, it's believed Kevin maybe might have had some medical issues last weekend at training. And that was reported in the Irish Examiner. And Kevin then subsequently made the decision to step back. But I think really, you know, we've probably become very process and business like in the world of GAA over the last few years, and certainly in the GAA media and certainly in GAA fixtures, with so many big games coming so thick and fast. And I think, you know, we just got maybe step back for a minute and wish Kevin well, because at the end of the day, from our side of things, Shane, Kevin is one of the most obliging managers you'll meet. He will go out and help you if he can at all. He's a really good, honest guy. He wears his heart on his sleeve. He's a four-year term with Mayo. This is his third year. You know, they've been unlucky in a couple of finals. They got over the line with the National League, but then came up a cropper in the Championship a week later, last year. All I'm saying, I suppose, really, is we probably need to sit back now and wish him every success in his recovery, and hopefully he'll be back on the sideline very, very soon. And what that man has given to Gaelic games, Shane, is incredible. Like, he won two Connacht titles himself as a player. He won an All-Star. He guided the St. Bridgens to an All-Ireland club title in 2013. He won a Connacht title then with Roscommon, where he lives, in 2017. And I suppose he's had it tough with Mayo in terms of championship. They've been lucky two Connacht finals as well, and they've got a lot of criticism for that. So I think on behalf of everybody in RTE, he's a former colleague of ours for a long, long time. We'd just like to send him our best wishes. I think that's really it.
Mm. It is make or break for Mayo. It's a crunch weekend in the Tulchan Cup as well. Last roll of the dice for a few counties. One of those will either be Tipperary or Leitrim. We can hear from Tip talisman Seanie O'Connor now.
This is a very important competition for the development of our group. We've had a lot of turnover players over the last 2 or 3 years, and a lot of new fellas coming in and good young fellas coming in. So this competition provides a great platform for us to build and hopefully push on up through the divisions in the coming years.
You mentioned a lot of new players. I wouldn't mind focusing on one stalwart, Jimmy Feehan. You know, he's been around for so long, and he's been at the very, very top level. 100 appearances there lately for the county. That's some achievement, Sean, isn't it? He could easily have got off the wagon there in the last few years, but he's kept at it.
It is. It's a remarkable achievement. 100 appearances and the consistency Jimmy brings. I mean, he's still an 8 out of 10 every game, one of our best players. I'd hate to mark him myself, I hate marking him in training, but he's a massive leader in the dressing room as well, and still having fellas around like that for the younger fellas coming through, it's massive, yeah.
Are you enjoying your football as much as ever, Sean Healy? You're a very young man, but you've been on the scene a few years too, and probably a lot expected of you very early too, and you know, it was great to see you playing Sigerson with UCC and to see your development. Are you enjoying the game as much with the new rules? And I suppose there is that challenge of trying to get tip football back up along with your teammates as well.
I am loving it. Listen, the new rules as a forward, that extra bit of space, you know, it's lovely. The game is a lot faster. It's even for the neutral to watch, it's a lot more enjoyable. And I'm loving being involved with TIP. Obviously, it's a massive, massive honour to represent the county, and I'm playing with a lot of lads my age. So for us younger lads, it's kind of trying to get Tipperary back up to the heights where a lot of the older lads left it, the likes of Conor Sweeney and all them. So that's the job for the next few years, to try and get back to those levels.
Tipperary's Seanie O'Connor there speaking to yourself, Damien. Make or break, a big weekend for both Leitrim and indeed Tip.
Yeah, we see, I suppose so many counties have probably nailed their colours to the mast in terms of trying to win a Tailteann Cup and trying to get out of the group. And I think for the likes of Leitrim and Tipperary now, they must try and drive on and see can they be among the best placed third teams to try and qualify for the Tailteann Cup as well. So I think while everybody's going to focus on your Westmeath and your Offaly and your Sligo, I think counties like Tipperary and Leitrim, it's crucial for them, maybe for one or two or three of these counties to try and get to a prelim quarter-final, get to a quarter-final, even get to a semi-final doubleheader and try and get that Croke Park experience. Why I say this, there has been talk in recent times of a third tier being introduced in football, and I've heard mixed reports about that. I've heard it's needed, but then I've also heard the argument that if it's introduced, it'll further segregate, you know, essentially the Division 4's teams and keep them isolated from the rest of the pack. So all along, the gap is growing between the Division 4 side and the Division 1 in terms of athleticism, conditioning, resources. And I suppose if you're two tiers adrift, you might wonder about your status in the pecking order. But anyway, the Tailteann Cup will play out over the next few weeks. I think as Croke Park comes into sight, counties will really go hammer and tongs for it.
We've spoken about the rise of Louth football a lot recently. Well, their under-20s are in the All-Ireland final tonight against Tyrone, 7:30 throw-in in Armagh. How do you see this one playing out?
Oh God, this is a really hard one to call. Like, I mean, Tyrone are looking to win another title. Be third and fourth years if they do. They're existing champions. They're battle hardened. They've overcome Donegal in extra time in the Ulster semi-final. Tyrone shut Kerry out in the All-Ireland semi-final. Then Callum Daly, their sweepers, doing a really good job. A lot of their players have had, you know, Hogan Cup and McRory Cup experience and success. You know, like I said, Donaghy up front, Rory Donaghy, really, really good player. And it's very, very hard to look past them. And then you've got a Louth team that have come, I suppose, really strong this year. And Fergal Reel is a good manager and Dickie Byrne is a good coach. And I think they've battled it out as well. They beat Meath in the Leinster final and it was their first provincial win since 1981. They've beaten Mayo since then, and I think they know how to see out a game. I wouldn't be surprised if there's a draw in the cards here, Shane. And I think it's hard to fit into the calendar as it is because there must be a 60-hour gap between playing senior and under 20 for your county as well this year. So it's going to be fascinating, but maybe a bit of momentum with Louth. Maybe that hunger could get them over the line. They've had quite a year. The seniors have done it. Minors were unlucky in the final. The Louth ladies junior team have won a title as well. So I think if you're supporting Louth these days, you're coughing up a lot of shekels on diesel and food and match tickets. I think they don't mind that at all. It'll be a cracking game up in Armagh. And Armagh's tailor-made for that game as well. Lovely compact venue. Suits both sides. It'll be on 7:30 this evening, so I'm looking forward to watching that, Shane.
Yeah, it will be a great contest, as will the Kilkenny Tipperary Under 20 hurling final on Saturday afternoon, 3:00 in Nolan Park. Yeah. Listen, we spoke about the rise of Louth football. We've also spoken about the rise of Kildare hurling. They do have a Joe McDonagh final against Laois to look forward to in a couple of weeks. But this coming Saturday, we have three hurling finals in Croke Park. 1:00 Mayo Roscommon and the Nicky Rackard. 3:00 throw in for Cavan, New York and the Laurie Mar. And a lot on the line, Damien, in the Christy Ring final, 5:00 between Derry and London.
Yeah, and that'll be an interesting one too. And I'm looking forward to I'm interviewing Conor O'Carroll tomorrow. Shane, he's a London player, London forward, and he's prolific, to be honest with you. And it's just great to hear the stories because from my memory of Conor O'Carroll, he's from Listowney in Kilkenny. I came across him first of all when he played schools hurling. I think he won an All Ireland school side with St Kieran's. Then he graduated, then played for Kilkenny in the under 21 All Ireland final. They were beaten by Limerick, and now he's banging in the goals for London. And I suppose you're going to hear a lot, maybe hopefully, about the sacrifices that are made to play over there too. And they'll face a Derry side that probably have been working very, very hard all year. London were pipped by Mayo in the league final, so they won't want to lose this one either. But a lot of focus then would have been on New York's involvement in the Laurie Mar Cup then, Shane, and a lot of criticism over that. And the argument is maybe players like Johnny Glynn, All-Ireland winners from Galway, and they're in that competition that they're way too strong for it. And there is a strong feeling there that they could actually go all the way up to the Christy Ring and compete and possibly win that. So I think a lot of criticism too that they've come in at the semi-final stage, and they came in last week and won that. They won it easily to beat Monaghan, so furore over that. And I can see both sides of the coin. A lot of hurlers in New York, and you've got to keep them engaged, but maybe they need to come in at a higher level too, Shane. So that's kind of where they're at with it. It'll be three finals on this weekend. Not much publicity about it, but there is a press launch tomorrow, and that's good to see. That'll be a weekend of hurling in a predominantly football weekend.
Okay, speaking of press releases, actually, we just finished on this note. An update was released today on GAA integration from the steering committee. Nothing set in stone. The main focus seems to be ironing out fixture issues.
Yeah, like it's, I think it revolves around the one club model as well, and trying to update that as well. And like, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on, and there's a lot of reading in that press release as well. I think there's the challenge is to deliver a new structure for a county board committee and provincial council in a new integrated organisation. And Ger Ryan is the chairperson of that group. And, you know, Ger is very well versed and very well placed to deliver a structure for all the three organisations to coexist and cohabit, Shane. And that really is the biggest issue. How can you get all the administrations to kind of come in under one umbrella? And then the one club model as well. That's working really well across the ground, but I suppose not everybody has embraced it yet. They are moving basically towards a one membership for all of organization. That's a complex piece of work. The goal is to have one single membership for all in 2027. That's just 2 years away, Shane. You know, that is a lofty ambition to have, because we saw there what had to happen for the skirt issue to be cleared up, and that took a while. But I think integration is very, very complex. The statement today was reaffirming their desire that there will be an integrated association by 2027. But the problem is you've had three separate associations. They spent decades building up their own identity. They have their own structures, their own way of doing things, and this, I suppose, is a landmark development, you know, and it's going to be very, very sensitive to build maybe a structure. The scaffolding has to be good in it that will stand the test of time. So 2027, in my opinion, remains a lofty target, but I guess it's a full year's work to have this up and running for the 2027 season.
Okay, on that topic, actually, we will be chatting to Nadine Doherty and Aoife Murray after the break on ladies football and Camogie on the topic of integration, fixture issues, and indeed on the individual championships as well. For now, Damien Lawler, thank you so much. You can hear more from Damien on RT Radio 1, 10 o'clock Friday night with the championship.
This is 2FM's Game On. This is 2FM's Game On.
Now, continuing with the topic of integration in the company of Nadine Doherty and Aoife Murray. The last paragraph in the statement, Nadine, if I come to you first, integration is a complex mission, but the sentiment remains the same. There's a clear commitment to deliver an integrated association for all by 2027. The integration of three separate associations who have spent decades building their own identity, structures and ways of doing things is an extraordinary undertaking. The process of integration is one that must be given time and respect to ensure that the outcome of the process is one association built with scaffolding that will stand the test of time and is ultimately what is best for each member of the Gaelic Games community. Is 2027 still a realistic time frame, in your opinion?
I think it is, Shane, and I'm probably one of few. Powerful statement from Mary McAleese, obviously. It always is. I've said it before about the steering committee. I just think they will do everything they have to do. They're working very hard behind the scenes, obviously. They're not in a position to disclose the fine details of what they're doing. And I think they made that very clear in that statement. We know what we're doing. We're on track. You know, not stop asking questions in a sense, but it's very much we are working here behind the scenes. I think they'll have all their bits in place. I think everything that they need to do will be in place. And I suppose 2027 being a stretch is we're probably looking at it because the clubs have to put into place what's been advised, the counties, you know, there's so much that will leave the steering committee room, be put on clubs and counties and so on, and that's probably where it's going to be a little bit trickier. But in terms of what the steering group have to do, yeah, I think they will have the full plan in place by 2027. I think they've been, I suppose, dominant with that, and I think they will see it through.
Aoife Murray, would you share in the Dean's confidence?
I'd love to say 100%. I fully believe that 2027 will be achieved. I fully agree that the steering committee, I think, will have a pretty detailed and stringent plan in place. It will be interesting to understand how that integration process is actually kicked off from clubs to county boards to provincials, etc. By 2027, and that's probably the period that I would say is probably the most unachievable. I really hope that that plan is adopted wholeheartedly by everybody, because you've got three associations, like just speaking from my own Camogie side of it, like, you know, Camogie was established, God, was it 1904? Like there's a huge history, there's a huge identity, and you would hate to lose that, but we are going to have to give something in order for three associations to come together under one umbrella. And I really hope that it's more of a merger rather than an acquisition, that all the three come together, form new parts to the association, new identities. That is something for all. And that is going to be extremely hard to achieve if everybody doesn't come to the table with that openness, the willingness, and if I suppose the aspirations to improve the experience for everybody.
Is there a fear that perhaps it won't be all equal in that regard, and that the Camogie, or on a lesser scale, the ladies football, might be suffocated, Aoife?
Well, you know, if you look at this as a negotiation piece and you've got three people around the table, there is one part of this who holds majority of the cards, and that is the GAA. They have the most of the real estate. We have to go and look to use grounds. There are still stories, you know, out there where Camogie teams or ladies football teams are second or third picks for even under 12 or under 16 boys teams, right? And that's what you hate. You hate pipping one against the other. But GAA do hold majority of the real estate, therefore they have the greater power. But I think you can flip it. They probably have the greatest opportunity to influence this in such a positive way. And I suppose that's what I would hate to think, that there might be people out there who are stalwarts or probably have a viewpoint that the GAA is the one and only being. And that's why I would say I hope this is a merger of three coming together for the greater good rather than an acquisition by the greater power.
I don't mean to be overly negative here in the Dean, but at the April 2025 SGI meeting, a Central Fixtures Oversight Committee was formally established. The purpose of this group is to take a wide-angle view of fixtures across the three associations with a long-term vision for fixtures in one association. Owen Cormican had a story in the Examiner last night. Cork Jewel players Libby Coppinger, Hannah Looney and Aoife Healy will have to choose between codes on Saturday, June 21st, as both the Cork Camogie and ladies football teams are in the All-Ireland Championship action that afternoon. We talk about compromise and integration and having organisations singing off the same hymn sheet by 2027. Surely the Ladies Football and Camogie Associations could be singing off the same hymn sheet in this particular championship.
I know, Shane. I was actually just waiting over the last few weeks for this to happen. It's, you know, it's a definite annual point of discussion, and Aoife will definitely have more to say because she's experienced it, I suppose, and she's had teammates who've experienced it. I just find it really frustrating because I don't think it's viewed as important by either the Camogie or the LGFA. And one of the reasons I think that is the notion on their behalf, it's because it only affects a few. So I don't think there's any appetite whatsoever to fix this in the short term. I really don't. And that's why I was so glad to read as part of the statement that there will be a centralised fixtures committee. The LGFA and Camogie come out every year and say that they've tried to avoid this. They sit down together, but due to pitch availability, television schedules, there's always, I'm not going to say excuses, they're valid reasons, I suppose. But it's just been put on the long finger and actually just put to the side because it is a handful of players and they don't see it as important. But it's just going to keep coming up until 2027, hopefully. And I don't see it being sorted before then.
Yeah, Aoife, how big of a frustration is this?
I think it's a serious frustration from the fact that, as Nadine just said, it's just every year. You know, I hope I was muted there when you even broached the subject, because I just left out such a sigh of again, you know. And I don't mean that in a disrespectful way, because to the few, you know, to those few players, like, it is such a headache. It is the biggest waste of energy for players. I do believe, though, if you do have a manager from, say, the ladies football, so Carol on one side and Manly on the other side, that they will take all the weight of this off of the players' shoulders, so they can just go and concentrate at what's in front of them. You know, as we always say, heads up, hurling, and play what's in front of you. And I really hope the two managers come together and have, and I wouldn't doubt it that they would, especially on, I don't know, Carl, but certainly on the Manly side, that they will come and bear all the brunt of what needs to be done. Now, it is a little bit in Cork's hands in the sense of, if they go out this weekend and they win, then they're going to be in pole position. Therefore, maybe the decision might be a little bit easier on which players get released, right? But you're just wasting, again, you're just wasting so much valuable energy and time when even the players off the pitch could just be enjoying their life, you know, relaxing, meeting friends, working hard, etc. Instead, they've got this fucking boring, excuse my language, but the boring boring topic that happens every single year. And I'm probably a bit more concerned that, you know, only now a committee has been formed with regard to bringing all this fixture conversation together. And that's probably just a little bit of a, maybe to Nadine's point, where it seems to be put on the long finger consistently. And unfortunately, the players, the people, they consistently get caught in the middle.
Okay, we do have to squeeze a bit of match action preview into this conversation, but it is a very important conversation to have. Looking at the Camogie fixtures this weekend, Aoife, Tipperary against Cork, Saturday 4 o'clock on the Rag, Limerick, Wexford and Rakeel in Group 1, and then in Group 2, Kilkenny, Waterford, Nolan Park, Derry, Galway, Oneg, Saturday 12:30 and 2 o'clock, Troens, respectively. Tip Cork, the pick of the fixtures, Aoife?
It's really interesting because you'd automatically go, say in Group 1, right, you'd automatically go Cork versus Tip. Tip's first weekend out, Cork have got a game under their belt, albeit not a very competitive game. So you'd automatically go there. But I'd nearly look at the, in Group 1 that is, I'd nearly look at the Limerick-Wexford and shine a light on those, because, you know, they could be vying for that last spot, and no one's going to want the last spot in that group. So I think it's going to be a huge match for Limerick versus Wexford, and will probably tell a huge amount about how maybe the latter end of the table will finish towards the end of the championship. So that's probably one I definitely say is probably the biggest one this weekend on the Group 1 side of things.
Okay. As I mentioned, Rathkeel 4 o'clock throw-in for that one. Waterford first out in this year's championship against mm-hmm. Kilkenny, who had a big win last week over Derry. Hard to read into what you learned from such a big win. Similar Cork's victory over Limerick. How important is it for Kilkenny though to finish top of the group? Because Katie Power was speaking about that, the disappointment, looking to reach a semi-final directly for the first time since their last All-Ireland title in 2022.
Yeah, and the funniest thing is, you know, when you're thinking of Kilkenny, you don't naturally think of quarterfinals. And it's probably been the last couple of years where they faltered. So for them, it is must be a massive, massive goal of theirs is to finish top and get straight through to semi-finals. And a lot will be taken from this weekend. I thought Waterford performed really well in the Munster Championship. I thought certainly towards the latter end of the league as well, they started to show some form. I think they'll be coming into us fairly fresh, and we'll see this as a potential big scalp for them early in their championship run. And then you flip it to the other side, you've got Kilkenny going. If we can take Waterford, that's two from two, and it leads them into the rest of the championship, in particularly basing into that Galway team. For me, there's a few little question marks beginning to be shown there. So I think this is a serious weekend for both Waterford and Kilkenny.
Okay, lots to look forward to. Aoife Murray, for now, thank you so much for taking the call. We will be reviewing all of that action next week, and indeed looking ahead to the next round of the Camogie Championship. In the ladies' football provincial finals, Nadine, we've no match action this weekend to preview. However, reviewing, let's start with Munster. Kerry 2-6, Waterford 10 points. Waterford so, so close yet again.
Oh, Shane, my heart broke for them at the end of it. It was a game they look back on, Shane, they'll regret for a long time. They were the better team, I felt, for 50 minutes of the game, individually and overall. They just outperformed the All-Ireland champions. They just didn't convert their chances. I suppose for me, watching that game and looking at them for this year, it's very evident that, you know, they don't have an out-and-out marquee forward. You know, they have players who are very good in the ball. They'll drive through the middle, but, you know, they don't have an Amy McInerney. And the difference, you looked at Kerry, who did very little through the whole game, and Danielle O'Leary barely touched the ball, but she's the kind of forward that Waterford doesn't have, and she created a goal from absolutely nothing. Waterford had dominated the Kerry kick-out, so it was so ironic that the goal that got them back in the game came direct from Mary Ellen Bulger's kick-out. Niamh Conacher, who had barely touched the ball for 15 minutes as well, caught the ball brilliantly, delivered a hopeful ball in, and Danielle O'Leary, she just went straight to goal. Whereas I feel with the Waterford forwards, if they get the ball in that area, they're holding it up, they're waiting for support, and that was the difference. But you know, as well with Waterford, for 50 minutes they did what I said last week, if they did two things they'd be in with a great chance: if they nullified Schieffer O'Shea, which they did to a very large extent, and if they didn't give away sloppy goals or goals against Kerry, they'd be in with a chance, and they did it for 50 minutes. And for the last 10 minutes, listen, credit to Kerry, and that's why they're All-Ireland champions, Shane, and that's what champions do. They win games that they have absolutely no right to win. And for the last 7 minutes, once they got the couple of points ahead, they parked the bus and Waterford couldn't break them down.
That's a great mentality to have, considering Louisa Mahertig has stepped away, Kayleigh Cronin, the Volvo Adelaide senior players, a new management team as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And there were a few interviews this week. They've replenished the team. Cuiva Evans has come in, and I think she played a couple of years ago, but she's come back in. And Broderick, a few players, Koch Lynch, their captain, talked about how they've lost a lot of players, but they have real experience who've also come back in. But yeah, you know, as I said, in a game they had no bearing to win at all, no right to win at all. They did. And do you know what was interesting, Shane, as well? Just, you know, we always talk about having matches in county grounds and so on. That game was on in Mallow GA Complex. Lovely pitch. There was a stand. And I know I'm contradicting myself here because, you know, in the past I'm calling for county grounds. The atmosphere was absolutely electric. Waterford thrived on it for the whole game. They definitely had a bigger crowd. Those last 10 minutes, you could nearly feel the supporters on the pitch. And then you flip it and we'll talk about it. You know, Castlebar, big stadium, big stand, possibly the same number of people there. I'm not sure, but it seemed just empty and there was no atmosphere. Mm. Now, I know the two games were very different in terms of quality and in terms of competition. But, you know, is it worth, I suppose, for these games, looking at really good facilities, really good pitches, a stand and getting a bit of atmosphere back, because attendances seem to have dropped over the last while, and it really had a great buzz about it, and the game matched up to the supporters on the sideline. And I just think at Waterford, I feel so bad for them, but I really hope they lift themselves, because they definitely are thereabouts with the say in this championship. They only conceded 2-6 against Kerry in that match and the previous match in the league, you know, so they drew with them as well in the round robin, so they have a lot to offer to this championship.
I was standing well going up against Dublin and Leitrim in the group stages. Contrasting that with the Connacht final, so
yeah,
the atmosphere wasn't ideal, and the quality of football.
No, Shane, do you know what? I suppose Mayo set out their stall in that they were playing 13-14 behind the ball. When you have possibly one of the best forwards in the game at the minute, Sinead Walsh, playing a defensive role for the majority of the game, well, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure out what way they're going to set up. And I suppose Galway, for me, I was disappointed with Galway because I just felt they fell into that rhythm of just recycling the ball. They fell into the pace that Mayo brought to the game, which was quite low. So yeah, it was just poor. You know, I suppose looking at Mayo, they had their first shot and goal with 7 minutes left in the first half. They scored 1-4. Sinead Walsh scored 1-3 of that. I think 1-2 possibly was from freeze and a penalty. It was 9-2 at halftime, and the game was long over before that. I suppose at Mayo, I would feel that their management might be happy enough with that result. Young team, they'll be saying, you know, girls, we didn't concede any goals. We stuck to the game plan. Had we converted one or two more of the chances? I honestly can't think of any other reason that management team is still in place other than
they're building
and their players believe what they're being told. I don't know, but it was terrible. Galway, who are definitely All-Ireland contenders, I just feel with them, you know, I think other teams who they'll meet down the line will actually look at that game and think, do you know what? We parked the bus against Galway and catch them on the break. We're in with the chance. They weren't direct enough. And again, it's gone back to Danielle O'Leary's goal and why Kerry are All-Ireland champions and Galway aren't. A Galway player with about 5 minutes to go, maybe Shauna Hine, she had an opportunity to offload the ball to Ava Noon for a direct goal, straight goal, and she popped it over the bar. And a minute or two before that, another Galway player was on the 21, straight route through to goal, and she popped it over the bar. Whereas if that was Danielle O'Leary, that's two goals or two shots on goal. So I think Galway have to be a little bit more ruthless and use the pace they have in attack, Shane.
Okay, well, no matches to look forward to this weekend. We're previewing the championship in detail in due course, but I do have to say, 100% in your predictions, indeed. We'll finish on that positive note. Group 1, Galway, Donegal, Tipperary. Group 2, Kerry, Mayo, Cork. Armagh, Meath, Kildare. Group 3, and Dublin, Waterford, Leitrim. Group 4. As predicted. That's why you're in every Wednesday, Nadine.
This is it, Shane. That's why you're sent in 6 weeks ago. looking at it very briefly, your Connacht, Munster, Ulster and Leinster winners, your provincial winners, are probably your top four favourites for the championship. But as we said, Waterford will have a say. Tipperary might ruffle a few feathers. Meath, Cork, there's teams there who will have a say, but won't be in for an All-Ireland win.
Okay, great stuff. That's all we've time for tomorrow. Game On, Marie Crowe will be talking Women's Nations League, URC Rugby and Gaelic football in the company of Rebecca Cray, Bernard Jackman and Brendan Devaney. That's all here in 2FM tomorrow from 6pm. That is where you can catch Marie and the gang. Up next is the new music show, Better the Silva, followed by The Green Room with Jenny Green from 9 and The Alternative with Dan Hegley from 11 o'clock. We're taking a short ad break, checking in with the news desk. Have a great evening from all of us here at Game On.
This is 2FM.